and welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We are your hosts, Helge Helberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we are excited about the show today, The Spice of Life, with some wonderful guests in the studio as we are diving into the world of herbs and spices and their history and culinary and medicinal properties. So if you need that little kick too in your life, this might be very likely the show for you. All that and more on this week's An Organic Conversation. Mark.
Yeah, you know, spices and herbs, I really think that they make anything better. You know, that little leaf of spearmint that you put in your tea, that cinnamon you put on your toast, I think that they're actually what bring flavor to our lives. But before we get into this show, I think we need to go to the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. Coffee crops are highly sensitive to weather and temperature fluctuations, making it particularly vulnerable to climate change. This past year, the cost of coffee skyrocketed following increased demand and poor harvests in high-producing countries like Colombia and Brazil. In 2010, the Securities and Exchange Commission adopted new guidance for publicly traded companies, requiring them to disclose climate change risks, such as physical risks to a company's assets and supply chain. In the risk assessment, coffee businesses will have to describe how the company will manage the social and environmental risks and opportunities of climate change. The assessment will be publicly available, which means that communities in the supply chain will be more likely to be adequately protected from impending climate risks such as flood, droughts, and extreme weather events. Not only will such resources protect communities, they will surely benefit global companies who rely on a stable supply of high-quality coffee beans. If you compost, you know that composting indoors is possible, but it's not always practical. Turns out that North Carolina has a group of compost activists aiming to change that, creating a composting shuttle service that picks up household food scraps, replacing them with a clean empty bin, and even delivers finished compost right to your front door. It costs $25 for a flat fee to sign up. Collection takes place once a week, and members are entitled to receive the decomposed waste, which was turned into black gold. Those who don't need the soil can, of course, decide to donate that share to a local urban farming project. On August 2nd, after 2 weeks of being hammered by record global warming-driven heat and storms, one of the two tree sitters blocking coal mining operations at the Bee Tree surface mine in West Virginia has come down. The tree sitter said in her arrest statement, "I plan on coming down from my tree and entering Raleigh County Jail. I'm not doing this because I'm giving up, but rather because I'm taking the fight into jail and into the legal system." The coal industry for so long has dominated not just the land, but the legal system as well. It's a legal system that consistently allows coal companies to get away with flagrant violations of the law, with damaging the land and destroying the health of the people. And that condoned the theft of this land in the first place. That control and power needs to be challenged and needs to end. Tree Sitter Collins has been released without bail after being charged with trespassing, conspiracy, and littering. The struggle continues both in the trees and in the courts, now with no end in sight. And the famous restaurant Chez Panisse that has defined the term California cuisine is celebrating its 40th anniversary with several events across the country this week. Most require tickets and proceeds benefit edible schoolyard programs and are sold out. However, have no fear. If you're in the Bay Area, there is a free event called Open Education Interactive Culinary Art, which will be at the UC Berkeley Art Museum. Attendees can meet cooks, farmers, educators, and artists and help create elements of a meal. To make advance reservations for the 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. event and for more information on the weekend, go to ChezPanisseFoundation.org/40th. I'm Jen Lloyd, and those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thank you, Jen. Jen Lloyd with the green headlines here on An Organic Conversation. Chez Panisse, Mark. Wow, 40 years.
Well, both of us have been aware and know Alice Waters. And I remember back in the late 80s and early 90s that it came across my desk that Alice had a forager, someone who went out and found the freshest and most unique ingredients for her restaurant. And I thought, that's the job I want. That's, where was I when the application process?
You're getting paid for finding good food.
I said, I do this every day at the produce market. I want that job. But she's just been so innovative for so many years.
And if people are not familiar with Chez Panisse, it's a Berkeley-based restaurant that 40 years ago started to define the term California cuisine. What is now kind of regarded to as farm to table across the country, really starting that conversation about the importance of a local food system and conscious eating. 40 years of Chez Panisse, 40 years of leadership through Alice Waters. Thank you, Alice. Beautiful work, yes. And her program, of course, the Edible Schoolyard, a national program for culinary education for kids, also going national now. With full force with the new, no longer Chez Panisse Foundation, but Edible Schoolyard Foundation. Good luck with that. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
We'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview with the Spice Dream Team and our special guest, Ursula Ehrut, a.k.a. Jane Spice, a true Spice Girl, here on An Organic Conversation. Stay tuned. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about the spice of life. Spices and herbs have defined our culinary world for thousands of years, from India to Italy, from the Middle East to the South Pacific. Spices and herbs are the key ingredient of life and inseparably connected to the people, the culture, the recipes, and traditions of that country. While the main ingredients of a meal might be similar in many parts of the world, spices set us apart. And yet also often connect us to something familiar because at the end, we are all one people. Our topic for today's show is the world of spices and herbs. With us in the studio is no less but Ursula Ehrut, a.k.a. Jane Spice, a spice girl extraordinaire with a highly diverse and spice-specific, spicy background. Ursula, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined by Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic Produce. A wizard not just in produce since 1988, delivering the finest organic produce to businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area and far beyond, but also a lover of fresh and even dried herbs. Earl, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And of course, joined us the team today also by Chef Sita, who is not just doing the holistic bite, but we wanted to invite her to lend her expertise to the Spice and Herb Show today here on An Organic Conversation. Welcome, Sita.
Thanks. Always a pleasure.
Ursula, let's start with you. Spices really have become your life, kind of by default, but also now by passion. You were born in Australia. You're part of a Lebanese family. When did you discover your love for spices?
We've always grown up with spices in our family. Mum and Dad have always cooked with different spices. Growing up in Australia, it's a melting pot of different cultures. So spices really were the connection with family and friends. I moved to San Francisco in 2004 and I really didn't know how to cook. I always relied on Mum's cooking. So I went out there and explored how can I make Mum's meals in a way that remind me of home and remind me of the culture. And I realized that the secret was using spices effectively and knowing what spice combinations really made the difference between a bland to a brilliant dish. And I was getting a lot of compliments from friends saying, how did you make this? And in actual fact, it was just knowing what spice combinations to use that made the difference.
And when we talked about this show today beforehand, I was fascinated. You said you can basically take the basic ingredients of a meal and travel with it around the world and basically define the culture entirely by the set of spices you use. And we will dive into that a little bit later in the show, but that's a fascinating idea that it's not about the staple ingredients, chicken, root, vegetables, whatever you have, but really the spices define the experience. Earl, when did you see herbs, fresh herbs and dried herbs as part of your business, really as a serious part? You're selling quite a bit of herbs to businesses and restaurants.
Yeah, it's a main commodity now for us. Fits right into fruit, vegetables, herbs. I would say in the 20 years I've been doing the wholesale, it was a matter. The first 5 years really focused on the foundation stuff, but after the first 5 years, it was a main part of what we were doing. At that point also, produce departments were expanding, getting more mature and sophisticated. So herbs was just real natural next extension to it.
And we want to hear what's the most commonly sold or bought herbs and spices. But let's start with the history of the spice trade and maybe even before. When were spices discovered and how?
Spices have been around for, I would say, thousands and thousands of years. And spices have been the inspiration for trade, exploration, war, poetry since the beginning of civilization. And for most of the time, spices were used for the medicinal qualities. And they were also used as a strong aphrodisiac. So they were really fought after with the queens and kings. At one stage, the Queen of England wanted ginger because it was actually wanted nutmeg because she thought it would actually help solve the plague in her country.
Oh, yeah, 1600. Right, beginning of the 1600s, several thousand people died. And was it actually a treatment?
One can never tell, right?
But Chef Sita, you talk about the medicinal properties of foods every time on the show, not just the culinary experience. What are some of the things that spices and herbs can address in general terms?
The things that come up the most is you'll see foods that have an anti-inflammatory effect, which I'm always raving about and trying to get foods that have anti-inflammatory properties into dishes, because that's really the root of a lot of diseases, is too much inflammation in the body. So you look at things like ginger and cinnamon and there's so many. I could just herbs and spices alike that offer those kinds of properties. And in addition to anti-inflammation properties, you've got antibiotic, antibacterial, antifungal. You've got things that help to stimulate digestion, stimulate memory, improve circulation. I could go on and on. I mean, anything that you're suffering from, more or less, you can help give your body what it needs to protect yourself with herbs and spices.
Yeah, there's this great story of my teacher always saying, if you get a cut in nature, just find a rosemary bush and kind of rub it into the wound, because it's antibacterial.
Actually, in the kitchen, we do this in the classroom too. Cayenne pepper, the capsaicin that's in it, that's what makes it really spicy. If you cut yourself, you can put straight cayenne pepper on it. And most people think, oh my God, that would kill
because it's
hurt so spicy.
For a week, but it will help.
It hurts for a second and then it takes the pain away. Cayenne pepper and anything that has a lot of capsaicin is used as a pain reliever. And the students will do this if they accidentally nick themselves, put a little cayenne on it, and in a couple of seconds, you've got no pain. So
you're listening to an organic conversation. I'm Helga Hilbert.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
We're talking about spices today.
I got to get some more cayenne for my cupboard. So I have a question. You know, with all the spices and herbs that people use all around the world, can you give us a definition of what is a spice and what is an herb?
Right, yeah. So herbs are typically the leafy portion of the plant, while spices are from any other part of the plant. Think roots, berries, and seeds.
And Earl, you, when we talked about right before the show, you said that's correct and...
Well, my
and there's always an and if there's a produce guy
not
in the room.
In that conversation, we were also determining perhaps fresh herbs can be more understood, and then spices are dried. And I think also that may translate to spices are very intense, and that the dried is always going to be more intense proportionally.
The dried is more intense.
Yeah, I mean, the conversion generally is a teaspoon of dried to a tablespoon of fresh.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Ursula's
absolutely
nodding. Well, talking about dried and fresh, when we buy herbs in the store, how do you select, Ursula? How do you know it's actually a good herb? It's a fresh spice. How do you select spices and how do you select herbs?
Okay.
What's the color? What's the shelf life?
So for herbs, it's just about the freshness and it's about the smell and it's about how green it is and how rich it is and whether it just looks. So it's based on look and sense and smell. With spices, I tend to choose whole spices because...
What's a whole spice?
A whole spice is where it hasn't been ground. And so the reason why I choose a whole spice is it lasts longer in your cupboard. And the spice packages that you buy today are actually quite large. So you want something to last more than a year, 18 months. So by buying whole spices, you can then take it home and then you can grind it like you grind your morning coffee whenever you want to use it. And then the spices last longer and actually the aroma and the flavor is more potent.
So for example, a vanilla stick, of course, as a stick instead of vanilla powder. But what else is out there?
Well, actually, I just wanted to tag onto that because it has to do with the oils, mm-hmm. the volatile oils that are in the spices. Whenever you grind it and you open up those oils, they can oxidize, they can get into the atmosphere. You're losing the strength of the flavor. So if you get it whole, those volatile oils stay intact and then they come out when you grind them as opposed to having it dissipate over time.
Mm-hmm. And I like that idea because you could buy as much as you want, like one cinnamon stick or mm-hmm. one vanilla bean or just a few little peppercorns or things like that. And you actually don't have so many jars in your cupboard that have spices that you don't use, right?
Yeah, and often, I mean, we all have spice jars that we have moved with four times, 7 years later, like still unopened. But it's cool. Like, we all love these 40 different spices on the shelf that we have never experimented with or touched. But you're saying regular shelf life, even if it's the clove or whatever, it's like 18 months, 2 years max.
Well, I think it's 2 to 3 years if it's a whole mm-hmm. whole spice, but a lot less. It's probably like 12 to 18 months. I guess my rule of thumb is open it up, smell it. If it smells like dust, well, you know it's time to toss out that spice. If it stops smelling like chili powder, then it's time to toss it out. The other thing you can do with whole spices is actually to roast them before you then grind them. And that just also opens up the oils and even makes the aroma of the spice even stronger.
Do you bake only the portion you will grind up or will you bake the whole thing?
No, you'll only roast the whole thing. Oh, you'll roast the portion you want to use for today,
like a coffee
that recipe.
Bean. Yeah, great. And Earl, you talk mm-hmm. about fresh herbs. Of course, the vibrancy, mm-hmm. it's pretty easy and clear. What about dried herbs? How do you know it's a good dried herb?
Well, it should have good color. It's not going to be quite as vibrant, and that is really the word that captures the freshness. It's not going to be as vibrant, but it's going to be generally packaged or jarred, and it should have good color relative to what it is in a normal fresh state.
And you can, some herbs at least, you can buy fresh and dry yourself, yes?
Oh, I think almost anything.
Yes.
Especially where we live in a fairly Mediterranean climate, everything grows well here. I mean, that's the one thing everybody should have, just a little bit of land or... Not even land, little...
Yeah, a little thing inside your house,
exactly.
Which is one... Yeah,
a little herb garden.
Yes.
Yeah, and Helga, you were mentioning the other day that even though you live in an apartment in the city and, you know, it don't have any room really to grow anything, you keep a little pot of something in your kitchen or on your windowsill.
I love the idea of backyard gardening. I had a garden in Berkeley once, and I planted everything at the same time, and it all came up at the same time. And I was loved by my neighbors because nobody could have ever eaten all the lettuce that came up. And it was a great experience. But given my current lifestyle, what I really love is that little windowsill herb garden, and it might just be 3-4 herbs, but they are so hardy, they're easy to maintain, they just need a little bit of sun, a little bit of water, and you can have them for 6 months plus before you really use them up. And how to dry herbs we'll get into in just a second. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we're talking about the world of spices and herbs with us in the studio, Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic Produce expert and herb lover extraordinaire, and Jane Spice, a.k.a. Ursula Ayroot, and also Chef Sita. We'll be right back after the break. Stay tuned.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
Over 25 years ago, my husband and I started a business around our passion for ginger. We called it the Ginger People. Today, you can find our products at natural food stores nationwide. We love ginger. It's what we do. And the more we learned about the amazing properties of ginger, the more we realized that everyone benefits from eating ginger every day. My name is Abby Leeson, and I am with the Ginger People. To learn more about our products, the goodness of ginger, and how it can improve your health, visit gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Helber.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is very spicy. We are talking about spices and herbs with a dream team of spice and herb lovers. Chef Sita, who always does the holistic bite, joining us for the full show today. Ursula Ayroot, who grew up in Australia, was born in Australia in a Lebanese family and has lived in many cities at oceans around the world. Our spice girl today, and Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic Produce, bringing us the finest organic produce and fresh and dried herbs since 1988 to businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area and far beyond. We want to dive into the culinary world of spices and herbs in a minute, but first, here is Mark Mulcahy with What's in Season.
And what's in season? Well, today we're going to talk about something that goes great with just about any spice or herb, and it's summer squash. It's abundant now. It's the end of August. It's abundant, and it's, you know, there's so many different kinds. There's the patty pan or the scalloped squash, and that's those round ones with the little flattened edge that actually look kind of like a seashell. Those usually come in yellow or green. There's crooked neck or straight neck, and those are the ones that have the thinner top at the blossom end, depending on whether or not the stem end is straight or bent. So the crooked neck or straight neck. And then, of course, there's the zucchini or club-shaped green, white, or yellow squash. There's also the cocoselle, which would fit into that zucchini category. The summer squash is so great because it can be grilled, steamed, boiled, sautéed, fried, you name it. You can cook it any way you want, and they mix well with just about anything. The thing that I really like about summer squash is because there are so many ways to cook them, you can just come home and just use your imagination when you're cooking them. If you tend to microwave or boil your summer squash, as some people do, I'd recommend that you consider steaming, because steaming is much better for the nutrient retention. So if you're going to bring them home and you're going to do something on the stovetop, I would do steaming to get the most vitamins. And when you're at the store and you're choosing them, you want to choose firm, heavy squash with crisp, tight, glossy skin. You don't want any dullness in the skin, because that means it's an old squash. For the sweetest flavor, you want to make sure that you're choosing smaller squash. And so for zucchini and gold bar, you'd look for something that's like 6 to 8 inches long. For scalloped squashes, you'd look for like something 3 to 4 inches round. So you got them at home. How are you going to store them? In the refrigerator, you can keep them in a plastic bag for 3 to 4 days. If you really love summer squash, if you have a garden out there and you've got way too much, or if a friend happens to drop one of those special surprises on your doorstep, you can grate it and put it in the freezer. And what you do is you grate it and put it in 2-cup allotments, and you stick it in a freezer bag, and you can keep it in there for about up to 8 months. Another last thing that I want to make sure that I mention about summer squash when you're going out there and eating it is don't peel it, because contrary to popular belief, for a long time people thought that summer squash didn't have a lot of vitamins because it was white inside. But if you look at the color, on most of the color of it on summer squash is pretty vibrant. And that they are finding on a lot of new studies that there's a lot of antioxidants in summer squash. And so you want to make sure that you eat that skin to get those antioxidants. And also you want to make sure you buy organic, because there is a lot of different pesticides that are used on summer squash to make sure that it keeps the insects away. So that's your What's in Season for this week. Back to you, Helga.
Thank you, Mark. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. That was Mark Mulcahy with this week's What's in Season, how to pick it, how to choose it, how to store it. I'm Helga Hellberg, and we are talking about spices today. We looked at the history of spices and kind of some of the medicinal properties and also the shelf life before the break. But Sita, Chef Sita, you had a comment on me growing herbs at home.
Yeah, there was another thing I wanted to throw out there, because unfortunately I do not have a green thumb. I have the opposite of a green thumb, a black thumb, whatever it is where you cannot grow anything because of incompetence or what. Or if you just happen to live in a place where you don't get enough sunlight to grow even a little bit of a window garden, particularly with basil, you can go to the store and buy a basil plant, keep it on your countertop and continue to water it for a couple of weeks, and then just take the basil from that plant. So you're not actually growing it yourself, but it holds up much longer than if you were to buy a bunch of basil that had already been picked. So if
even
you
without
use
a window, without
exactly
sunlight.
yeah, it'll last longer than if you bought a bunch and you put it in your refrigerator. So
how would you dry it, Earl or Ursula or Sita? How do you dry herbs when you take that? Could you Ursula, you were saying, or Earl, you were saying that...
Well, there's a couple ways, and I'll mention one briefly, yes. And I know Mark wants to contribute here.
So you have
here.
A bunch of fresh herbs,
yeah,
you know you won't use them, they're kind of getting a little wilty, then what?
Yeah, get a couple of sprigs of whatever it is, rubber band them together, and you can hang them up and let them dry that way.
Oh, wonderful.
And that's really the easiest way.
Easy.
Now, some people will...
I can do that.
Yeah, some people will wash them, but I don't know that that's necessary. If you do wash them, you want to pat them dry.
Mark. Mm-hmm.
Just a gentle pat, though.
Yes.
So a couple of things on drying herbs that it's really important. If you're looking at something that's really hardy, like sage, thyme, bay leaves, oregano, those are low moisture herbs. And so you can air dry those. You can hang those, like Earl said.
Without washing.
Yes, without washing, which is you can just hang them right in your windowsill. But if you have something like basil, tarragon, lemon balm, or mints, the best way, because they have such high moisture, is you want to put them on a low temperature in the oven or in a dehydrator, because that'll actually allow them to dry properly. And chives, if you're thinking about that, those are best just kept frozen to keep them.
I actually have a different question. How do you actually store fresh herbs to have them last the longest?
Yes, Earl.
Well, the way I like to do it is you treat it like a live plant. You can trim the bottom and put them in a little bit of water, so you actually have a little display in your refrigerator. So a low, some low container, put about an inch or two of water in, and actually place them right up there.
Like a vase, like a bunch of flowers.
Sure. Another way would be moisten the paper towel, wrap the roots in the paper towel.
And then in the crisper.
Yes. Now, the one important thing I want to mention was when you're dealing with the actual leaf or bunch, whatever it is, you want to be very careful with how you handle it, because it is high in oil, and as you bruise it, it releases that volatile oil.
Wonderful.
And you want to keep that intact as much as possible.
Definitely in the fridge, not outside.
Definitely
room temperature.
That's going to keep it better. But again, if you leave it outside, it's not unlike a plant. You know, if you keep it moist enough, you can keep it at room temperature for a little while.
So even a drier herb like a rosemary, you would put in a little bit of water, cut the bottom so it absorbs it fresher.
Yeah, then it's almost indefinite. Really? And you want to keep it out of circulation, air circulation too.
Sita, you had something to add.
I love
as
that
well.
Suggestion. I do the same thing. Actually, whenever my glasses, my water glasses at home, whenever it chips on the end and I don't want to put it back into rotation and serve it to people when they come, I use those as like little herb vases. So I have a whole shelf in my refrigerator that has herbs in little glasses of water. Another thing,
glasses that are chipped that you don't want to put back in rotation. How many friends do you have over every week?
Party
put it back in rotation.
All the time.
That's right.
Tagging on to something that Mark said too about dehydrating, if you do have a dehydrator and you're going to put your herbs in there, go ahead and put another mesh layer on top of them, because as they get dry, they get a lot lighter, and that fan in the back of your dehydrator will start to blow them around. So you want to lay a piece of parchment paper, you could lay another one of the sheets that you're drying them on over top, and then they're not going to fly around and clog your fan.
Wonderful idea. Mark, you had something to add as well.
Oh, I was just going to say that if you are going to put your herbs in the fridge in a little bit of water, like Earl was suggesting, make sure that if you do that with your basil, which you can keep on your counter in water, that the leaves don't sit in the water, because that'll help the leaves to turn black.
Spices and herbs have defined the culinary world for thousands and thousands of years, really defining the culture of a specific country. Ursula, with your vast background, part of a Lebanese family, having grown up in Australia, how do you use spices? What are the five key spices that you have in your home I'm sure you have 100, but what would people use that you can make a great vast variety of different foods and cuisines out of?
My recommendation, so when I cook, the spices I usually always gravitate towards are ground pepper, that's a spice, paprika, it's a Hungarian spice, I use it all the time. Chili powder is fantastic. It adds that warmth and that heat that you need. And also my favorite spice is actually cumin. You can use cumin for everything. It adds that ground and that robustness that really just strengthens any dish. And I've always got my friends asking, what's that flavor profile that you've got in there? It just adds that extra dimension to any dish. So those will be my five recommendations if you wanted to start your spice pantry.
And you were saying you can buy most of them as a whole spice. Where would you buy that?
Just at the grocery store, you can. They give you the option, if it's possible, to buy whole spices. Something like a chili powder, that's a combination of different spices, so you actually can't. You have to buy that whole. But then you can make your own different spice blends with the different spices that I've suggested.
So chili, there's the chili as the basis of the ingredient, right?
But chili powder also includes cumin. It also includes thyme, maybe some oregano. It also includes some turmeric. It really depends on the combination. And a good tip for everyone is you may buy a chili powder one day, and 6 months later you'll buy a different chili powder from a different brand. The flavor profile and the heat is going to be very different. So just keep an eye on that and just really think about which chili powder you enjoyed more.
And Sita, you just started into a little groove here by the word cumin. Fill us in.
Oh my goodness. Well, I love that suggestion because cumin is so versatile. Mm-hmm. Cumin seed and coriander seed, I think, are two extremely versatile spices. And that's because you see them in a lot of different cuisines. So cumin and coriander are both used in Indian cuisine. They're also both used in Mexican cuisine. The thing that's really cool about coriander seed is that coriander, as Ursula was saying, the difference between the spice and the herb, the coriander is the seed of the plant and cilantro is the leaf of the plant. So you see both of them in both Indian and Mexican cuisine. So I think having both in your pantry will give you a lot of versatility.
Yeah, and you can also see them actually in a lot of Lebanese cooking as well. Cumin and coriander is one of the key ingredients that mum used for her cooking. And she would always buy it in a truckload. It's interesting, in Australia, we call coriander, the herb, cilantro. Mm-hmm. The opposite way. We call it coriander in Australia, and in the U.S. it's called cilantro.
They do in India, too. My mom always called it coriander leaf instead of cilantro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And how do you use them? Like, how do you get experience? If somebody's fairly new to the world of herbs, you use, or spices, you use pepper, salt, and maybe a little bit of curry or so. Is it just experimental? What's your best suggestion for somebody wanting to add more spice in their life?
Absolutely. I would suggest just experiment. Follow a simple ingredient, follow a simple recipe. For example, chicken is very forgiving. It absorbs a lot of different spices. So why don't you just start with salt, pepper, and add a flavor profile that you like. So for example, cumin. We know it's robust. We know it's warm. We know it's hearty. Maybe start with a teaspoon of cumin. And then the next day, add a different variety. You can use garam masala, which is an Indian spice blend, which gives off those amazing aromatics. Or you can just really simplify it and just use chili powder, and then you can just decide what spice combinations really work for you. So last night I was grilling, I used salt, pepper, and some cumin, and it was great.
And you were saying earlier in the show that you could just cut the chicken in four pieces and try four different varieties of spices and really experiment and mark them and remember what you did.
Yeah, and spices,
so you can figure it out.
Yeah, and spices are incredibly forgiving as well, in terms of unless you're going to put 5 tablespoons of chili powder or cayenne pepper.
That's a problem.
For the most part, it's pretty, you'll get a great flavor.
Well, summer squash, which I was talking about in what's in season, it would be like that too. It could take a lot of spices, mm-hmm. a lot of different spices, and become something completely different. My question for you, Ursula, is, are there any no-nos when it comes to spices?
There really isn't any no-nos, but I think the big thing that all of us are sometimes afraid of is, what if we put too much spice and it's too hot?
Yeah, there are no-nos, but there are a lot of boo-boos.
But I think the key thing is, can I eat it? So my recommendation, if the meal is too spicy, it's just add a touch of honey, a little at a time, tasting the spiciness to see when it tames down. And then if you don't have honey, you can also try cream or coconut milk. Mm. And that should really diffuse the flavor of spice.
What if it's too coriander-ish, whatever? If you just put, you know, you used equal amounts and one was just so more potent and all you taste is one flavor, what's the antidote to one direction?
I think you can do the same thing. You just want to lessen the flavor intensity, and you can always do that with some form of liquid.
So fascinating. The world of spices, and we want to dive into the world of herbs. Earl, you brought the most famous herbs, but we want to we do that in a second. It's time for Chef Sita. No, okay, Earl, yes.
Well, I just got one comment, because I wanted to dovetail in with the what's in season squash.
Spice, yes.
You know, for years I didn't like squash, and until I realized that I overcooked it. So I think that's very easy to do. So that was the one comment I wanted to make. If anything, undercook it, because as soon as you overcook it, it's mush and the flavor's gone and there's no opportunity.
And then what kind of spices do you like to add?
I'm a pretty
squash.
Simple guy. I'm a lot of salt and pepper.
Yes.
I like cayenne a lot, just a little hit
touch
there, because it brings out stuff and you don't even know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And rosemary, basil I love. I mean, the easy thing with basil is you throw on some basil, whole basil leaves right on with a grilled cheese sandwich, right in there in between the pieces of bread.
We're talking about the world of spices today with Earl Herrick, Herbs and Spices of Earl's Organic Produce, and Ursula Erut, a.k.a. Jane Spice, our Spice Girl special guest today, and Chef Sita. And now it's time, actually, for your holistic bite with Chef Sita.
This is like the most fun show ever. Oh my gosh. Spices and herbs. And it's just so apropos that we're talking about summer squash, because it is so versatile. You've heard us say that because it has such a mild flavor, it takes on the flavor of herbs and spices so beautifully. So Mark had mentioned that summer squash is high in antioxidant, which is an excellent point. We talk about the health benefits. It's also high in carotenoids, which means that it's both cancer and heart protective. And much like other seasonal produce items this time of year, squash is high in water, so it's very hydrating. And that also means that it's low in calories, which is great because summertime, we're trying to look good with fewer articles of clothing on. So it helps to give you a lot of flavor and a lot of sustenance without too many calories. So when you talk about using, we talked that if you boil them, you tend to lose a little bit of that flavor because it's so mild. You maybe want to go with roasting and sauteing your squashes to get more flavor of what is in the vegetable, but also to take on the flavors of what you cook it with. And with squashes, you can do great spices like anything with curry. The cumin is so fantastic with squash, coriander, turmeric, and And then fresh herbs, really, the sky's the limit. They're good with sage, chive, oregano, thyme, and basil, just to name a few. And speaking of squash and basil, oh my gosh, my most favorite, totally beloved, cannot get enough of it recipe this summer, something that everybody in my office is making like on a weekly basis, is a squash gratin with basil, cashew, Alfredo, and gluten-free breadcrumbs. And it's so simple. And actually, it was really beautiful because everything I've been getting in my CSA the last few weeks have just inherently been all the ingredients I need to make this, because you use summer squash, tomatoes, and basil, and some leek or onion or whatever else you happen to get in there. And I get my summer squash, I slice it really, really thin on a mandolin, but you could do it with your knife. Get it roasting in the oven for about 20 minutes. And while that's happening, you slice your tomatoes, set those aside, rinse your basil, pop it into the blender with some cashews, some miso, some garlic, and some water. And you blend it, you know, you blend it until it gets really, really smooth. And it turns this gorgeous green color and tastes like Alfredo sauce. It's so great. So when your squash comes out, you just layer the squash and the tomato, and if you want to add some sautéed onions, pour your Alfredo over it and top it with some breadcrumbs, put it in the oven, and it's so decadent. It tastes like fettuccine Alfredo. Your friends will never know that it is as good for them as it is because of the ingredients, not just the produce, which is so healthy for you, but the herbs and spices, which we're learning today, offer so many therapeutic benefits. So that's the recipe you'll find on our website, an organic conversation. Or on Facebook. It is a summer squash gratin with basil, cashew, Alfredo. That's your holistic bite.
Thank you, Chef Sita. Wow, yes, your partner, female or male, Alfredo or Alfredettina, will pour themselves over there for sure. Delicious. Thank you.
Fredettina?
We are talking about the world of spices and herbs. Again, spices really define the culinary world and the culture of countries and have done so for thousands of years. Ursula, our spice girl, Ursula Erud, a.k.a. Jane Spice, here with us in the studio. You said cumin, chili powder, coriander, cinnamon, and nutmeg are kind of the five key spices that you would start off with, where you can create a flavor profile that is very diverse depending on the mix of those five. We want to hear from Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic Produce, which are the top five herbs, and we will dive into that right after the break when we come back. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And stay tuned with more. We'll be right back.
Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earl's Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earl's Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earl's Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, my name is Abby Leeson, and I am the co-founder of The Ginger People. You can find our products in natural food stores near you, from delicious ginger drinks, sauces, spreads, ginger chews, baked goods, to skincare products. We love ginger. It's what we do. Add the benefits of ginger to your life, and you get that little kick, too. I am Abby Leeson, and I'm with the Ginger People. For inspiration around ginger, go to gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are joined today in the studio by Chef Sita of Your Holistic Bite, joining us all day today as we are diving into the world of spices, and by Jane Spice, a.k.a. Ursula Arut, a spice lover and expert from the San Francisco Bay Area, and also Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic Produce, a premier distributor of solely organic fruits and vegetables and fresh and dried herbs since 1988. And Earl, we were just summing up the top five spices that somebody could start with in the shelf to really create interesting flavor profiles in the mix thereof. What are the top five herbs mm-hmm. that you sell and that you see people are really enjoying?
Well, the top five varies a bit different times of year, but generally speaking, it's going to be basil, far and away the most popular, spearmint or a peppermint, thyme, rosemary, and sage. Now, saying that, there's always tarragon out there and marjoram, and of course, there's Italian parsley and cilantro and dill. So, you know, you get on a roll. What's so great about this time of year and where we are, pretty much all over the country, is it's a local thing. I mean, this is the time of year. As long as it's not directly in the sun, you can grow it yourself, and it's right at your fingertips. It's in virtually every store.
And beyond the store, you can find fresh herbs literally on your nature walk. I mean, there are many parts in the United States where, yeah. you know, rosemary, you know, some of these, even peppermint, grows in every backyard.
Some of my favorite walks are with people that are in the know, and you're just walking around, there's just a total conversation always going.
In 4 hours, you make it 40 yards, and you just eat and point. And
exactly.
Sita, what are some of the health properties of herbs, fresh and dried?
You know, it was fun. I was listening to Earl talk about the top five and then some, and I was thinking, my God, I have the best job in the world. I get to work with this stuff every single day. And then it occurred to me that you, the listener, can have the best job in the world because you can work with these herbs every day. Every night when you go home and you make dinner, you have the opportunity to have the most satisfying and rewarding dinner ever, because this is also delicious and it's so good for you. I mean, basil is antiparasitic. It also helps to stimulate the immune system. Thyme is an amazing antimicrobial. In fact, a lot of people use it in a solution to help sanitize their kitchen. Spearmint is great for memory. I remember when I was a student, people used to take mint with them when they were doing testing because they could recall more that they learned in school on testing days if they had mint with them. Rosemary is an incredible anti-inflammatory. People will use it to make rosemary tea, and it helps with things like back pain because it reduces your inflammation. And then sage is a muscle relaxant. So these are just one or two each of these, and all of these herbs have half a dozen or more properties that they offer you in terms of health benefits.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned in your Holistic Bite a CSA. We had a question. The CSA is a community-supported agriculture program. It's a box program where you subscribe, usually in the beginning of the season, or throughout every week, to a box of produce, whatever it may be in that week, from a specific farm, and pay the farmer in advance, which is good for the farmer, allows you to get a bargain, and the beauty of the freshest, most locally produced produce, right, often delivered to your doorstep or to a central point.
Mm-hmm. I think CSAs are so brilliant, especially for people who are just delving into this world, because it challenges you. It's like, oh my God, I've got tarragon in my box this week. I've never used tarragon before. Let me go to Jane Spice's website and find what I can use tarragon with.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yes.
Now, I've got a question. Is we heard about how to store fresh herbs. But Ursula, how do you store? What's the best way to store those whole or dry herbs, spices that you were talking about?
Yeah, in an airtight, sealed glass container, somewhere in your dark cupboard. Essentially, you don't want any light or any air because it just oxidizes and takes away the flavor. Mm-hmm.
That's so classic. You know, they say, I love to play guitar, and they say never use your guitar as furniture. Never put it out. Always leave it in the case because it will dry out. The wood will dry out. Mm-hmm. The tuning will get off. I would assume, or I'm just saying this now, that most of us, at least I have, and until now, until today, until this show, have my herbs on top of the oven. So they get hot every single time, totally exposed right next to the window where the sun hits it for 4 hours a day. So that's a bad idea, yes?
Yeah, great. You expire the flavor a lot quickly. And what really surprises me is when people buy these beautiful displays and they display their herbs and spices.
All still originally sealed, though.
Right, next to the kitchen stove, like you said. And then you're like, no, that needs to go into the cupboard to maintain
dark and
flavor.
Air-sealed and ideally cool.
Yeah.
And they last again for 12, 18 months. If it's a whole spice, maybe 2 years, maybe three.
And you could see where that came from because people were going, okay, I forget that I have them in my cupboard. So mm-hmm. I'm putting them right next to my stove where I'll see them. So you could see how people would come up with that habit, right? But it's not the best way to store them.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's right.
How do you combine herbs, the world of herbs that Earl brought? And Earl, you have a whole box full that you brought into the studio. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. The whole studio has the scent of fresh basil. And what else did you bring?
Well, I brought... First of all, from my little garden, I brought some French tarragon, some lemon thyme.
When did you harvest this? Today?
Or this morning, about 6 a.m.
And you
walking
kept
around with a little flashlight.
You kept a little wet towel around the stem, which you were saying if to keep them fresh, keep them in the fridge ideally, but they need water. It's like a fresh flower.
Yeah, what I did was to remind myself which ones they are, I wrote little notes, and then I did put a wet towel over the entire thing, and it sat in my car all day.
It looks as perky as it could be.
Yeah, it really does. It's
really in your car?
Yeah, my car.
And today's a fairly hot day here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
So. Yeah. Now they're intact, meaning I just cut them off at the ground. So the thyme sprigs are still on the stem, if you will.
Yes.
So, you know, it's still very vibrant. So the fact is, you know, sometimes we think herbs are so fragile, but the fact is they're very, very hardy. And just a little bit of care I gave them. One of the things about handling them, though, is you don't want to handle the leaf because that's where the volatile oil and all the fragrance.
The more they touch the leaves of herbs, the more you extract the oil and the more prone to... It's basically their defense mechanism, right? The more you allow them to wilt.
And they will bruise when you touch them.
Sita, would you use... What is this?
That's thyme. Lemon
French thyme. French thyme and lemon
French.
Thyme.
French thyme
I think
and
I
lemon
have
thyme.
The lemon thyme, and I'm not giving it back.
So if you if you cooked with this, would you like pluck off these little tiny leaves, or would you use
whole thing? Thyme is very interesting in that respect because there are these teeny, teeny, tiny little leaves on the stem. And if you get it and it's super, super fresh and that stem is really delicate, go ahead and use the whole thing. Chop it up. It's not going to make that big of a difference because the amount of time it takes for you to pull all of those leaves off of the stem when the stem is so soft, it's going to make you crazy. But if it's a little bit on the older side and it's dried out a bit, it's very easy to pull the leaves off of the stem. You just pull in the opposite direction that it's growing. That's for thyme in particular.
Oh, in the opposite direction that it's growing. So from the top part down,
exactly.
You have all the leaves in your hand.
Yes.
And the golden rule is usually when you can break it, when you bend it over, and it breaks like a carrot would break, a fresh one, then it's fresh. If it doesn't break, it's fresh enough to be used as a whole. If it does break, it's too woody. The nitrogen has left. Ursula, you had a comment to that.
Yeah, I think there is a great use of herbs that nobody really does as often as we should. I was once given a bouquet garni, or a bouquet of herbs, as a gift because I was having a friend come over for dinner. So the next time you want to bring a gift over to a friend, create a bouquet, and then they can then use it later on for their dinner all during the week. And I thought that was an extraordinary gift instead of flowers.
So we talked about the use of herbs. We talked about the use of spices. What's the combination of the two? Sita, is there a golden rule? Are there some no-nos?
It's just like what Ursula was saying about getting to know your herbs and spices. There aren't really any no-nos for combinations. You just want to go for it and give yourself an opportunity to experiment and learn. I think that there is a lot of information that you can get if you're just getting familiar with how to use them. The Flavor Bible is a book that is fantastic. It teaches people about how foods that are in similar families tend to complement complement each other very nicely. So you could begin there and start to understand about how you can play off of things. But I tend to like to think about, you know, the five tastes, your sweet, your sour, your salty, your spicy. You think about the five tastes and try and balance all of those. So if you have something that's very sweet already, like garam masala is nice and sweet and spicy and savory. It's got all of those things and it gives you a nice rounded flavor. Instead of just playing one note all the time, like just spicy or just salty, you're not going to really hit all those cravings. So kind of get into it and see what complements each other.
Mm-hmm. And Ursula, I think that's your golden rule too, right? Experiment.
Yeah, experiment and just keep trying.
Keep trying. And more information on Keep Trying on Spices is a wonderful website for Jane Spice. It's janespice.com. But Mark, you had in.
Yeah, I just had a couple quick questions I want to make sure we get in today. What if you have a spice like, or if you don't have a spice, the recipe calls for cumin, right? But then you go to
and
your
it's
cupboard.
It's 8 o'clock and the store's closed.
And you've got, well, not in San Francisco, but.
I know. And you're about to have you're panicking because you know you're going to ruin the dish. Okay. So if you need an alternate to cumin, you can definitely use chili powder. Mm. If you need an alternate to, say, cinnamon, you can use nutmeg or allspice. If you need an alternate to, say, ginger, you can either use allspice, cinnamon, mace, or nutmeg. There's always different ways to use that spice. So take, for example, if you're making a rack of lamb and you want to use a Moroccan spice rub and it calls for 7 different spices, it's okay to only use 3 or 4. The flavor profile might be slightly different, but nobody needs to know that. It's still going to be as delicious, more delicious than just using salt and pepper.
That's right. Anything you add might not be exactly what the recipe would have presented to you, but for sure it will be more spicy than without.
Absolutely.
And I have the last question I have is, does it matter when you add your spices?
It does. So for ground spices, it's best to add spices to the pot towards the end of the cooking time. However, for whole spices, it's best to add the spice towards the beginning of the cooking time so the flavors have time to release.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Earl, what's your favorite that you use in your world?
Well, far and away, it is basil. That's my favorite. I will actually put it on almost anything. And That's my favorite. And I did want to touch on making herb butter. I think that's an easy way to integrate it. You know, what are you going to do with fresh corn on the cob? We'll make some tarragon herb butter. Mm-hmm. And you can do that by having a half pound of softened butter, put it on some plastic wrap, put in 4 tablespoons of tarragon, put it together. You can roll that up, put it in the refrigerator, then you can cut it off.
Whatever you need.
Yeah, so you have a nice little herb log.
The world of herbs and spices today on An Organic Conversation. Thank you so much to our guests today, Chef Sita Bryan, and Ursula Arut, a.k.a. Jane Spice, our Spice Girl, and Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic Produce. Thank you so much. What a fascinating world, Mark.
It's so fascinating. And what I'm hoping is, do we still have time for Helga's Organic Moment to fit this in? This has been just a full show.
Yes, we got lots of comments on the on Alice Waters' 40 years of Chepanese birthday. And most people are congratulating, of course, and kind of having a wonderful memory, having had dinner at Chez Panisse. So, all the recipes, and if you want to comment on the show or are looking for any more feedback or have questions, send to share@anorganicconversation.com. And here's my organic moment. I've been pondering leadership these days, looking at Alice Waters and Chez Panisse. How am I, how are we showing up in this life? What are we fully committed to, really? And what are we not committed to, even though it's part of our lives every day? I'm talking about that fire of conviction, the spice of life, our calling, our truest purpose, being dedicated, passionate about something, awake in our hearts so much that us and it becomes one. It's not that we have to stay on the same course or remain in the same career throughout our lives. There's as much value and virtue in becoming an expert in one of these things as they're being well-versed and well-traveled being and having done a multitude of things, because ultimately all of our experiences will be important when we manifest our contribution to society, the one thing that only we came out here to do in this lifetime. However, when we do find our passion and purpose early in life, extra magic is possible. For 40 years, Chez Panisse, a little restaurant in Berkeley, has changed not just the lives of the people who have eaten there, but our very understanding of food and education, and the importance of local farmers in the world of artisan and organic foods as a society. Alice Waters has shown up fully. People who know her know that every single bite of food that has ever left the kitchen at Chez Panisse is basic, and basically every word out of Alice Waters' mouth in the last 40 years has been about the importance of conscious eating and the nourishment of a healthy food system far beyond our bodies. Good for you, Alice, and good for all of us. So I'm bowing my head to your incredible leadership today. Congratulations, Alice Waters, and indeed, happy 40th birthday, Chez Panisse.
That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer is Lauren Mulcahy. If you missed parts of this show or for any other show, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com. We are your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye-bye now.